The new MCAT, Tame the Beast. I'm excited to have on Admission Straight Talk today Brian Schnedeker, National MCAT Director for Next Step Test Prep. Brian is a test-taking whiz. He scored a 44 on the old MCAT and a perfect 180 on the LSAT. He's been in the test prep business for almost 20 years and has been with Next Step Test Prep since 2012. His articles have appeared in U.S. News and except his blog, and we all know which is more prestigious. And he is also presented at webinars co-hosted by Accepted and Next Step Test Prep. I'll include a link in the show notes at accepted.com/153 to some of these resources. Brian, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Linda. Glad to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Now, you've presented, as I mentioned, at a couple of webinars on behalf of Next Step Test Prep at Accepted. So you're not exactly a stranger to Accepted and its community. But can you give us an overview of what Next Step Test Prep, and I know I'm going to do this again, Next Step Test Prep offers pre-meds?
Sure. So we are the world leader in one-on-one MCAT tutoring. We offer a variety of different resources for MCAT students, but at our core, we really see ourselves as a tutoring company. And what I mean by that is everything that we do is focused around customization for individual student needs. So at nextstepmcat.com, students can buy full-length practice tests. We sell books for both content review and practice and verbal. And if they go to our main tutoring website, nextsteptestprep.com, they can see all the information about the customizable one-on-one packages that we offer to students.
Okay. Now, there are other companies offering one-on-one tutoring. What differentiates Next Step Test Prep tutoring from the tutoring offerings of other test prep companies?
Sure, it's a great question. And I think really it comes down to a difference in philosophy. So if you go to one of these enormous companies where they really make their money off these big group lecture courses, and there's nothing, I have nothing bad to say about those companies. That's a particular style and approach to education. And a lot of students want that. They want a generic, you know, group setting that they're comfortable with. Now, those companies will also offer one-on-one tutoring, but for them, tutoring is a side dish. It's an afterthought. It's not where they make their money. So that's, frankly, the entire business gets viewed from this perspective of we're a classroom-based company. At Next Step Test Prep, our entire philosophy is around the tutoring. I mean, frankly, that's how we make our money. So that infuses the whole business. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. Even our books are built around the notion of customization. So as we both well know, and as your listeners well know, there's a million companies out there offering MCAT prep books. And the way every other company on the market works is they just have a set of books. There's no options, no variety, no customization. It's just you buy a box of books containing, you know, 4 to 8 books, and that's it. At Next Step, our books are actually split into subsets based on the needs of students. So we have a set of books called Content Review. That's all it is, Content Review. We have another series of books called Strategy and Practice. Just what it says on the tin, Strategy and Practice. For the kid who doesn't need Content Review, maybe he's watched the con videos, maybe he did took one of those classes. And then we have what we call our additional practice books. So we have a book called 108 Verbal, just verbal practice. We have another book coming out in just a couple of weeks called the Q Book, with nothing but science discrete questions. So even on the level of our book sets, we have in mind our tutoring philosophy, which is everything is about customization to the student. So when we have one-on-one tutoring, you're not getting some cut-and-paste tutoring like you might get somewhere else. You are working with a tutor who all they do is tutor. So everything about what they do is customized to your needs.
So, I mean, I know some companies, some test prep companies, they focus on teaching the content. Others say they focus much more on test prep's tactics and strategy, or test-taking tactics and strategy, because the content is easily available, so why should they teach the content? So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that Next Step will focus and allow you to focus, you the applicant to focus, on what you need to focus on, whatever is your area of weakness. Am I getting that right, or am I putting words
Absolutely
in your mouth?
Right. Oh, no, that's, I mean, look, as a practical matter, of course, you know, 85, 90% of students want 85, 90% of their tutoring time to be focused on test strategy, practice, techniques, and so on. But we don't write off that 15%, right? That we've had students, one in particular comes to mind. We had a woman who was a non-traditional student. She had worked as an attorney for many, many years, came in and took our diagnostic test, having not taken a standardized test since the bar exam 2 decades ago.
Oh, yeah.
And this woman came in and just knocked it out of the park. Of course, perfect verbal section, right? So this was a person who had excellent critical reading and critical thinking skills. She needed her tutoring to be focused almost entirely on content review. And that was totally okay for us because we customize everything to each individual student's needs and approach.
Right. I can also imagine there are some people who may in a particular area need content review. You know, they're
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since the new test changed over, overwhelmingly that's been in the new content, right? Rare is the student who wants to spend tutoring time on kind of fundamentals of physiology.
Bio.
Yeah, bio, right, because they were all bio majors. So when content review becomes a focus, it's almost always the new stuff, the biochemistry and the social sciences.
Now, and you kind of started to touch on this a second ago, but how has your tutoring and MCAT materials, how have your tutoring and MCAT materials change as a result of the new MCAT?
I mean,
you kind of hinted at it a second ago, but.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, first, when it comes to the materials, they haven't changed at all because we literally didn't publish stuff for the old MCAT.
Okay. Where
we didn't make books or tests or anything. So when we heard about this big notice of this new MCAT coming, our first reaction was, you know, the same kind of trepidation the students felt, like, oh no, what change is scary. What does this mean?
Yeah.
Right. And then we, what's that?
A lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. The second big revelation we had was that the cornerstone of good MCAT prep is the official AMC prep materials, right? That's always been the case. That continues to be the case. For the old MCAT, there were a whole bunch of exams. There were like 8 or 9 of the old practice exams. That was all going away. So sometime in, you know, late 2012, early 2013, when, you know, we knew that the MCAT was coming, we had an idea of what was on it, we realized we needed to refashion ourselves almost into a publishing company, right? So all of our books and tests from the ground up are brand new for the new MCAT. And as far as the tutoring, you know, both everything and nothing changed. You know, nothing in the sense that we help students with what they need help with. We help with the critical reading. We help with the content review. So the core nature of one-on-one help didn't really have to change that much. But of course, like I was just hinting at, like you said, the focus of tutoring tended to be very much more on the new stuff that students had trouble with. Overwhelmingly, that means biochemistry, but a second place would be the psychology and sociology.
Okay, so that became kind of the new focus. Now let's shift gears here in the show a little bit. We've been talking a lot about next step test prep. I want to shift focus much more to the MCAT itself and kind of what the applicant needs to do well on the MCAT. And I think one of the questions I hear most frequently from applicants is, how much time do you recommend students budget for MCAT preparation?
Sure. So that is something that's going to vary dramatically by orders of magnitude based on the individual student. So I'll give you the, you know, kind of the rough average, a typical student that we work with, and then I'll address the outliers, right? So the typical student should spend anywhere from about 2.5 to 3 months on the low end to as much as 3.5 to 4 months on the high end. And that would probably get you the middle of the bell curve plus or minus a couple standard deviations. It's somewhere from 2.5 to about 4 months. Think of it like a semester in college or a little bit longer than a semester in college. And the time devotion, again, I say to students that depending on their score, goals, and background, the MCAT is anywhere from a heavy part-time job, you know, think 20 hours a week, 25 hours a week, all the way up to basically a full-time job. you know, 40 hours a week for months at a time. That's going to be most students. Now, you do get the outliers, okay? So you get the students who are super duper strong. They're right in the middle of taking all their MCAT classes, very sharp, have a real good knack for the MCAT. Those students might prep for as little as a month because they can come in and take an AMC official practice test and already get pretty close to the score they wanted. And so frankly, you know, at Next Step, we don't take the philosophy of sell everybody tutoring. We take the philosophy of talk to the person first and see what their goals and needs are. And we've had students say, well, I took your guys' Next Step diagnostic test and already got a 512, to which we say, okay, then you don't need much more than some more practice tests. So you do get the lucky ones, right? Those are rare, but you get the lucky ones. And then you get folks at the other end of the scale who, you know, again, maybe they're non-traditional students, so they have a long way to go in refreshing the content, or students who have historically struggled with standardized tests going all the way back to the onslaught of tests they have to take these days in high school, even junior high. So if someone finds themselves in a position where they struggle more, I mean, we've had tutoring students work with us for as much as 5 or even 6 months. I mean, not a whole school year, but you know, pretty darn close to it.
Yeah, for sure. And do you think students have to study more because of the new MCAT, because of the additional material covered?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit I know was taken off from the old MCAT, but overall.
Yeah, they nibbled around the edges. Yeah, I mean, they took out momentum. They took out you know, certain parts of genetics. They took out little things, like I said, kind of nibbling around the edges of physics. And they took a pretty big scalpel to organic chemistry.
Right.
But that doesn't make up for the fact that they added an entire semester in biochemistry, an entire semester of sociology. And they technically say you only need one semester of psychology. But all the reports we heard last summer and even into this year suggest that the level of nitpicky minutia detail that seems to be creeping its way into the psychology section has led me to start recommending that people take an entire year. They do Psych 101 and 102.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's just raw math. If you actually count up the number of questions on the MCAT based on science discipline, number one with a bullet is obviously is biology, right? I mean, biology is the big thing. But number two, surprisingly, psychology. And then number three, biochemistry. The top three sciences, two out of three are now the new sciences. So that just means there's a bigger volume of stuff you have to be familiar with.
Now, the medical school application cycle usually starts, or the official start of it is June, right? The beginning of June. When do you recommend, or what kind of calendar do you recommend for medical school applicants who want to apply in a given June or in a given cycle? Let's not even talk about this year right now. Let's just talk in general.
Right.
Terms.
Yeah. So if we wanted to talk in some sort of, you know, a platonic, ideal, abstract, perfect student that we would all love to be right on track,
right,
it would be a person who starts their MCAT prep the day after they recover from New Year's.
Okay.
They enjoy their Christmas and New Year's holiday break, and then before they even go back to their spring semester of school, and they start prepping, and they spend January, February, March prepping. They take the test in April, or if that's not going to happen, they spend February, March, and April prepping. They take the test in May. And we got to remember, of course, it takes a little over a month to get your scores back. So you get that AMCAS step one guide done in June. You get your scores back by June if you haven't gotten them done already. And then you can have your next big party on the 4th of July when your MCAT has been submitted, your letters have been requested, and all that stuff you know much better than me, I'm sure.
Right. I know that some people also, I mean, if they have taken the prereqs for the MCAT, they actually try and take it the summer of between their sophomore and junior years. So they have the exam at the end of the summer. And then if they bomb it, they can retake it. And if they don't bomb it, they're set to go.
Yeah, and actually, given the new reality of having to take biochemistry, which a lot of colleges won't let you take until you've had a year of until you've had a year of general chemistry, a year of organic chemistry, then they let you take biochemistry. So I think the new ideal time is, yes, the old ideal time actually used to be after sophomore year, because you could comfortably,
that's what I'm saying, right,
not even just, you could comfortably get all the MCAT prereqs done your first 2 years of school. Now I think it's actually sort of become January, which used to be a very unpopular administration. Yeah. Almost nobody used to take the test in January. I think that's become the new perfect time to take it, is January, smack in the middle of your junior year, because you can have all your prereqs done over 2.5 years now. You take it that January, and like you said, it gives you that fallback. If things didn't go the way you wanted them to, you have the luxury of taking it in April and May with all of the rest of your slower classmates.
I wonder if the additional requirements of the MCAT is not going to kind of encourage people to take gap years.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that. Actually, just in our own, from our own perspective, we've been seeing a lot more gap year.
So we
both, interestingly, both in clients and in tutors, we've been seeing a lot of folks who come to us now and say, you know, I've got years of teaching and TAing experience all through college. I rocked the MCAT. I'm taking a gap year. I want to teach the MCAT before I go to med school. And as long as they meet our requirements of teaching experience and so on, we're happy to work with folks like that. And we've been seeing an unusually high proportion of that.
Yeah.
Just this coming year.
I mean, I could see this leading to it. No question that if you want to do well in the MCAT, you want to take the MCAT once, you're better off preparing for it over the summer, and you need to have the prereqs. So, you know.
And of course, taking it the summer before your senior year, like late in the summer in August, I mean, it's possible to apply, but it does put you at a pretty heavy disadvantage.
Yeah, I would not. I don't tend to recommend that. Not for our ideal student in a platonic kind of.
Right, this abstract platonic form of the MCAT.
Right. Okay. This podcast is going to go live in May, and some listeners will be planning to prepare over the summer to take the MCAT late this summer and apply in 2017 to matriculate in 2018. That's kind of what the ideal that we were talking about, or close to it. Others are planning to apply in this application cycle, hoping to matriculate in 2017. That is not the ideal, but in your opinion, if they haven't started their MCAT prep at this point in time, and again, we're talking May, so it'll be in a few weeks, do they still have the time to do the necessary prep and apply in summer 2016, or is it too late?
I'm going to fall back on the phrase that you're getting maybe sick of hearing me say, but it depends on the student, right? So let's say that it's early May, then... faithful listener, whoever you are, push the pause button right now and go take a diagnostic test.
Okay.
Because you need to see where you're starting from. Because if you're one of the lucky ones, you know, someone who can take a diagnostic test and let's say score a 507 right out of the gate, you only need to bring your score up, you know, 1 to 3 points to put yourself comfortably into the 80 to 85th percentile, then yes, you could cram it in a month. You know, you could wrap up your finals the first week or two of May. You go completely gangbusters on the MCAT for a month, bring that score up 1 to 4-ish points, and yes, you can take your time. If you're the more typical student who takes a diagnostic test and ends up feeling like, you know, they've just been blindsided, wow, okay, I need to bring my score up 10 points.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to discourage you from trying it, but it's going to be real, real tough. And that, I got to tell you, as a tutoring company or someone who works for a tutoring company, The most common thing we hear, frankly, is students contacting us in late June or July saying, I rushed my MCAT, I took one of these generic group courses, or I tried to prep on my own. Frankly, I wasn't ready. If I'm being honest with myself, I knew I wasn't ready, but I thought I had to rush it in so I could get all of my applications in for this cycle. And look what I did. I ended up hurting myself with a bad MCAT score. Now I'm coming to you guys, and I need real help over the next 3 months to take it in August or September. And I've, you know, changed my timeline. Now I'm going to take a gap year. We literally get that phone call, without exaggeration, every day in June and July. From June 1 to July 31st, as those various MCAT scores come back, literally every day, I mean, not even once a day, we get dozens of phone calls a day from students who are saying they tried to rush it in April, May, or June when they knew they weren't ready. And it's heartbreaking every time, because that's a student whose future just got knocked off kilter a bit, but we do our best to get them back on track. Mm. So, yes, take it when you need it for the application cycle, but make sure you're ready. There you go. The MCAT should be a one-and-done deal.
I think this is a great point. because we get the corollary calls. And I think the point you're making here about taking it when you're ready, postpone it if you're not ready, don't take it. You can take the gap year. But the kind of point that we're both dancing around is that many, many schools average MCATs. So mm-hmm. if you bomb the MCAT, it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. It continues to influence your, unlike, by the way, business school, law school, and most other graduate programs, medical schools average the MCAT. And they mm-hmm. all see them. And they all view it somewhat differently. Some will weigh the most recent. Some will take the highest in terms of the individual evaluator's view of the score. But it doesn't, it's not wiped out, which is basically what happens, let's say, in business school or law school.
And the way I put it with students when they talk to us is I always say, we don't know what they'll do. Probably they'll average it. But I always describe it as it's very disempowering, right? To submit to MCAT scores takes a choice away from you and puts that choice in the hands of the admissions committee, because now you're letting them decide how to view all these multiple MCAT numbers. Whereas if you prep once correctly and knock it out of the park, that's some power back in your own hands. That's some power in your own corner, because now you decided, I took the MCAT when I was ready, I put my best foot forward. Now all the admissions committee gets to see is this one best day that I had. And in a process that sometimes can feel terribly disempowering, because it seems like the admissions committees hold all the cards, so to speak, you don't want to be surrendering any choices you have along the way. And having to take the test two or even, God forbid, three or more times, it is a big choice you're giving back to the admissions committee.
It's true. It's an excellent way to look at it. The other thing I sometimes tell applicants, first of all, in terms of only taking the MCAT when you feel you're ready and you think you have a good chance to knock it out of the park and get the score you've been aiming for, I completely agree with you. But sometimes the corollary question that we sometimes get is, should I apply? You know, I'm only going to get my MCAT score back in August. Should I apply? Which means that the processing isn't going to happen to the end of August or September or sometime that's quote-unquote late in the process. And my usual response to that is, it depends a little bit on you, is your chances of rejection because you're late in the process are higher. There's no question about it. But the chances of acceptance are zero if you don't apply. So is the opportunity of starting your medical school education earlier worth a heightened risk of rejection? If you're going to be devastated by rejection, then don't do it. Wait till the following June and just apply when your chances are best. And mm-hmm. if you can handle that possibility, and also the possibility that you're going to get accepted a year earlier, then go for it. It's just at that point, it's a personal choice. But the point you're making about having more control over what the medical school admissions committees know and see about you, I think is an excellent one. And I completely agree. It makes no sense to take this test until you feel you're fully ready. Now, mm-hmm. let's say somebody's taken the test, and whether they thought they were fully ready or they didn't think they were fully ready, they didn't get the score they wanted. When do you feel a medical school applicant should retake?
Okay, so I promise I won't say depends on the student. The answer is they should probably begin prepping for a retake as swiftly as they possibly can, because at least some portion of that training is going to stick with them even after the MCAT. And the longer they wait, the more the curve of forgetting in psychology, where you learn something and the curve drops off and so on. So the longer they wait, the more stuff they're going to forget. Now, if they have other life plans that are going to interfere with that, you know, they're going to, you know, work with Habitat for Humanity somewhere for 6 months and they have to fly to Costa Rica tomorrow, or, you know, of course, they have to adjust around their life plans. But the general rule of thumb should be, if you're committed to a retake, you want to start prepping for that retake as swiftly as you possibly can. And the other big thing I always want to emphasize when the issue of retakes comes up is, you cannot get away with thinking that, well, I've already studied for the MCAT once, so I don't need to give it as much time, because ironically, a retake is even harder than the first time, because now not only do you have to rebrush up on all that content and make sure it's right at the tips of your fingers again, and not only do you have to continue that training regimen to get your brain back into that marathon shape that you had right before game day, you also have to invest a ton of time in figuring out and then unlearning all the bad habits that led to failure the first time. And we work with so many repreppers at Next Step. I mean, to give you a sense of the scale, only about 15% of students retake the MCAT. Something like 85% of test takers are one and done. And yet our client base consists of over half retakers. So this is something we are very, very familiar with. And by far the hardest part of working with students who are reprepping is really digging deep to figure out what went wrong the first time, why it went wrong, and then getting them to change habits, because habits are so very hard to break.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, I think we also, I didn't actually calculate it, but I know that our client base is also disproportionately reapplicants. And they applied once, they didn't get in, they realize they need help, so they come back the second time.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten the data yet for the 2015 version of the test. So, I mean, just in disclosure, that stat is from the old MCAT, that about 85-ish percent of students took the test once, about 14% took the test twice, and 1% or fewer took the test three or more times.
It's interesting because I think half of medical students, didn't they have to reapply? I remember that statistic.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that, yeah. I think, on AAMC, but... Okay, I don't have the source at my fingertips, but while the when should you retake in terms of timing, I mean, you certainly addressed that question. I meant more under what circumstances, like guidelines for who should retake MCAT. Okay.
Sure, and you know, maybe I'll turn that question back on you, because obviously you have much more experience than I do with the admissions aspect of it. But to be clear, the answer is it depends, right? The student should retake if only a few very select things happened. Okay, the biggest thing we actually have to dissuade people from is retaking it simply because they're unhappy with their score. And it can't be an emotional decision. It's got to be a very cut and dry one. And so first, there's the obvious cases. Students who got violently ill during the exam. Or I had a number of students, this is going back now to 2004 or 5, there was this big blackout over the Northeast. And so I had the dozens of students who were in the middle of their test and there was a blackout that knocked out 5 states worth of power. So obviously that completely throws your mojo off. And it doesn't matter if the power comes back on and they say, oh, you can restart. No. I'm going to retake this test. Because, yeah, absolutely. We had that with the snow just this past January. If there was something kind of outlandishly weird, then you don't need to ask for advice. It's obvious that you should retake. The other case would be if you know there was something really wrong with your prep. Like after walking out of the real exam, if you can just honestly say to yourself, I was totally unprepared for that psychology section, or I thought physics was going to be easy, but I haven't had it in 4 years. And if you can honestly admit to yourself that you were really unprepared for the exam, then you need to retake it. And then finally, of course, if your score just comes back and it's not a number that's going to get you in. You know, you check with the schools, you check with the fine folks at accepted.com, right? And they tell you, look, because of this number, you're not even going to get a second look. And then you have no choice, right? I mean, you want to go get MD program, you're going to end up retaking the test. Yeah.
Right. But I think your point about this is not an ego measure or a trophy. It's a matter of whether you get in or not. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty important one.
If you do well, but not as well as you wanted, retaking on a decent score is actually seen as a pretty serious error in judgment. So by way of example, a 509 is the 80th percentile from last year's data. So if you get a 509, you're among the top 20% of test takers. That'd be like getting, you know, roughly a 31 on the old test, the 30, 31 on the old test. That's fine, right? It's not a stellar, amazing score. We wouldn't hire you as a tutor. I mean, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but that is totally okay. right? Chances are if you get accepted to med school, it wasn't because you get a 509. If you get rejected from med school, it wasn't because you got a 509. But if your ego takes a bruising because you're an A-plus student and you think, oh, but all my practice tests were 516s, there's no way. No. Retaking a 509, that's going to send a weird signal to the admissions committee. They're going to wonder about the judgment of a student who got a score that was totally okay and chose to retake it, because the data is pretty rough on retakes. As much as 30 to 35% of retakers, their score goes down. And so, again, like I said, it represents kind of questionable judgment.
Right. I'm wondering, I mean, I haven't seen the new MCAT scores by school, but I'm wondering if somebody was aiming like for Johns Hopkins or Stanford or Harvard, if going back to the it depends answer, I can imagine other schools would say retaking a 509, like, what are you doing? But I'm wondering if those schools would be thinking, you know, that's a little below average for us. I mean, obviously it's not, again, no score is looked at in a vacuum. That's why, you know, this conversation is a little bit on the academic and theoretical side. But
sure. And then, of course, you would ask the school, right? You would ask around. And if they tell you, yes, we're recruiting heavily for stellar MCAT scores, we're looking for 515 pluses, then a 509 retake becomes a reasonable choice. But it's, you know, you don't do that just for showing off purposes. Oh, I think I can do better, let me retake. No. You need to have some real hard advice from a real expert, or better yet, the school itself, before you start retaking a score that is ego bruising, but okay.
Now, the new MCAT is new. It's only been around for about a year. Do you feel that until all applicants are taking the new MCAT and the schools get used to the new MCAT, that maybe the GPA is going to be weighed a little bit more heavily?
I would think it would have to, sure. Yeah, I mean, I always like to remind people that admissions committees are not professors. They're more like insurance adjusters, that accepting someone to a med school is a risk, right? That's a spot that could have gone to somebody better. There's always this kind of theoretical better candidate out there. So their job is risk mitigation, right? Now, obviously, there's the obvious, you know, amazing students with a 4.0 GPA and a perfect MCAT score who climbed Mount Everest with a busload of nuns and puppies on their back or whatever. You know, these ludicrous personal achievements. And of course, med schools want those. But the reality is that when you're admitting the bulk of your class, a big part of it is just making sure you don't make a bad decision, right? You don't want to accept somebody who drops out or doesn't succeed or so on. And the reason it's a sort of a tangent, but the reason I'm saying that is that makes admissions committees structurally, institutionally, conservative bodies. I don't mean conservative politically. I mean conservative of not liking new things, right? Not wanting to be careful about their decision-making process. You know, and so when there's a new yardstick that comes out that they don't quite, you know what to make of quite yet, then sure, you fall back on the old standbys. You go with GPA and the soft factors, and maybe, I mean, we've actually heard explicitly from some folks, some of our clients, that schools have said, we're not even looking at the psychology score for the first year. We don't care what you got on it. We're going to take your other three scores that we can analogize to the old MCAT, and that's the only thing we're going to look at until we have a pool of data, not from AMC, but from our own applicants,
right,
of what to make of this new psychology score.
So they're going to be doing like validity testing probably over the next
years. Sort of micro version of that with their own applicant pool. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
What do you see coming down the pipe from and for Next Step Test Prep? Either for medical school applicants or perhaps for others in healthcare field or other graduate school applicants?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're definitely a small but very fast growing company. So we do currently offer one-on-one tutoring for the DAT. If any of your students or any of your listeners are thinking about dental school, for the PCAT, again, if folks are thinking about pharmacy school, we haven't branched out into any of the other pre-health exams yet. And of course, since our founding, we've worked with GRE students who want to go to grad school or maybe an MD PhD program where they need a GRE score, GMAT for business school, LSAT for law school. Obviously the MCAT is the big one when it comes to working with college students. Yep. You know, in terms of what we're rolling near the end of the summer, we are going to be offering an a sort of self-paced, you can think of it like a class, but it's not a class in the sense of, you know, go to a classroom, but it's going to have hundreds of hours of online video. It's going to include all of our books, all of our tests, a QBank, going to be, as with everything the Next Step sells, priced very, very competitively against the alternatives. And most importantly, this self-study option that we're going to be providing near the end of the summer is going to include live office hours, unlike the sort of video-only courses that you can get from other test prep providers. And the office hours are not going to be just some random MCAT teacher, okay? It's going to be me. It's going to be my colleague, Dr. LaFond, an MD, PhD with 15 years of MCAT experience. The people running our live office hours to work with students are actually going to be all of the curriculum folks, people who wrote the books and wrote the tests. And we think that's going to be a great option for folks who maybe don't want to or can't invest, you know, the $3,000 to $4,000 that might go to a one-on-one program, but are willing to invest more in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $1,500 for a self-paced plus live help option. And so that's we're real excited about that. We haven't announced the official launch date for it yet, but the plan right now is to start it up at the end of the summer for students preparing for next January's MCAT or for the seasons beyond. And like I said, we are obviously branching out into the various pre-health options.
Right. And for your self-study option, will that also, I don't know, whether it'll be kind of self-identifying or computer identifying, will it be customized to the needs of the students? Will there be,
Right, and the customization
computer adaptive, I think, is the term I'm looking for.
Yeah, well, the MCAT is not a computer adaptive test, so we're not kind of strictly speaking doing that. But we do. We have built a study plan generation tool where the student types in, "Oh, I'm most worried about biology. Oh, I'm prepping on a part-time basis. My test date is 3 months out." You know, where they can answer a series of questions that allow a study plan to be generated that's going to be just for them. And then, like I said, the office hours that'll be running several times a week, where they can bring in the questions, where they can ask to review passages with the group. So it's not just a pure video review. It is plenty of access to a live instructor where they can get their questions answered and ask questions even about their study plans, you know, if they want that kind of customized feedback from us.
Okay, great. What do you wish I would have asked you?
one of the ones I say this all the time, but I keep saying it because it's so important, is what's the most common mistake MCAT students make?
Good question.
Because they make it every time. I mean,
okay,
what's
the most common mistake MCAT students make?
And the most common mistake is real simple. It's a failure to fully review their practice. What I mean by that is, here's your typical MCAT student who doesn't get good guidance, who doesn't have a tutor. Let me take a practice test. Okay, I sit down, I crank it out over 7 hours, I get my score. Oh, that's not the score I want. Yay, that is the score I want. And then, okay, let me quote unquote, I mean, obviously your listeners can't see, I'm doing the air quotes here. Let me review the test. And they spend less than 45 minutes clicking through, looking at maybe a dozen questions that they got wrong. No. If you spend 7.5 hours taking a full practice MCAT, you have to spend anywhere from 5 to 15 hours reviewing that test, question by question. And it is long, slow, grinding, boring work, but it is absolutely essential to good prep. And I'm fully convinced that half of my effectiveness with my own tutoring students is simply because I make them do that. I make them fully review their timed practice, because not doing that's the number one mistake students make.
So do you want them to review the questions they got right as well as the ones they got wrong, or just to really
absolutely
spend time on the one? Oh, okay. All right, that's a great.
Absolutely, because maybe you just got lucky. Maybe you thought about it the wrong way. You were only kind of halfway right. Maybe you had it down to two and you just picked the right one, but you're not really sure why. Or, and this is really important, good prep is not just about fixing bad habits. It's about reinforcing good ones. So I always tell my students, there's this illusion in test prep. I always get it down to two when I get it wrong. No. Hogwash. You get it down to two, and half the time you get it right, and half the time you get it wrong. The only reason you think you always get it wrong is because those are the only ones you're reviewing. If I told you to go through a full-length exam and only review the questions you got right, by the end you would go, I'm a genius. I always get it down to two, and I get it right. So there's lessons to be drawn both from mistakes and from success, and we really want our students to emphasize that, not only to learn and raise their score, but to keep that motivation and that morale real high.
That's great. Okay, any last bits of wisdom or advice for pre-meds about to take the MCAT?
We've said it already, but I'm just going to say it again right here at the end. Don't take the test until you're ready.
Okay.
Make sure you are ready for this thing.
Great. I think that is a very good note upon which to end. Brian, thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. Where can listeners learn more about Next Step Test Prep, its tutoring, its materials, and the work that you do?
Sure, absolutely. So they can go to nextstepmcat.com. That's our site where we sell the tests and books. If they're interested in getting a little more information or reading about our tutoring options, that would be nextsteptestprep.com.
Okay, great. We're going to link from the show notes at exhib.com/153 to the resources Brian just mentioned, as well as to other related resources. Listener, thank you too for taking the time to join me for this, our 153rd episode. If you found this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/153. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.